People pay for value, right? And you can't even ask what they need because they don't really know what they need. It's not their job to figure out, to tell you how to make a better product for them. It's your job to get them to complain to you and tell them their problems. Because if you hear enough, then your job as an entrepreneur is to figure out, oh, how can I solve that problem?
Right, yeah.
And that's the cool part of being an entrepreneur.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. And today I am excited to have as my guest, marketing expert and author Bill Flynn. So let's learn a little bit more about Bill Flynn. If you want to learn how to scale your business, then you need to talk to Bill Flynn. He's the author of Further Faster, The Vital Few Steps That Take the Guesswork Out of Growth. He simplifies the process of running a successful business with tools and techniques that anyone can learn and use as a springboard to profitable and healthy growth. He has over 30 years of experience, having worked for and advised hundreds of companies, including 20 startups. He's an 8-time startup vice president and a 2-time CMO. He has over 10 years experience advising and coaching businesses. I am happy to have as my guest, Bill Flynn. I am here with Bill Flynn, and I'm very excited. First, I want to know, how did you get into marketing? What led you down that path?
So I was always told that I kind of had a marketer's mind, even though I started in sales, and I just thought that was sort of fun. But I did sales at startups mostly, which you kind of need to be a hybrid. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to understand sales, but you also have to understand marketing and business development and that type of thing as well, because you're trying to figure it out as you go. So I've probably dabbled in it, you know, maybe my first 10 or 15 years. And then I actually became I headed up two different marketing organizations over 25 years. So yeah, and I definitely was more, I'm not a sales guy, even though I did it for a long time. I was never really born to be a sales guy. I don't have any of the stereotypical qualities of a sales guy, but
you're not the greasy car salesman. So.
Yeah, you know, well, let me see. I really don't like golf. I don't drink, although I'm Irish. I'm not really good with the jokes. I don't remember them.
Okay.
So I've always enjoyed marketing. And marketing, too, you should probably decide what we mean by marketing.
I was just going to ask you. Yeah, what's the difference between sales and marketing?
Marketing makes sales easier, and sales starts whenever there's a whiff that money is going to be asked for. Whenever that is.
Can you say that one more time?
So to me, marketing's job is to make sales easier. Marketing's and sales starts when there's that assumption at whatever point in the conversation that you're going to ask for something, typically money. Mm-hmm. Whenever that is, that's when sales starts. Everything else before that is marketing. You know, you're creating awareness, you're generating interest,
right?
Maybe doing some needs analysis, whatever it is. But wherever in that process, from awareness to closing the deal and negotiating, somewhere in there, there's a crossover between marketing and sales. And by the way, it's not linear. Sometimes you go back to marketing when you're in the sales process, right? Because maybe they're not ready yet, or you didn't really prepare very well. Mm-hmm. So there is that sort of blurred thing. And I've run both sales and marketing at the same exact time. Mm. And so overlooking both, I could definitely get a sense of how they interacted with each other. Mm. So that was definitely my experience, is that I like to boil things down to real simple things. So marketing is make sales easier. Sales is when money or something else is being asked for.
Right. So that's why we have all the commercials kind of preparing us so that when we're ready to buy Coke, us actually being there at the store, that's the sale.
Yeah. Well, that's obviously keeping in the back of your mind and just sort of that process of branding more than anything. And so branding is definitely a marketing function because it makes hopefully sales easier.
Now, I was always a little bit confused about, well, when I was really young, right when I got out of college, I was confused about the difference between sales and marketing, because one of my very first job out of college, I just needed a job, and my degree was in music, and what was I going to do? So I got this job. They called me a direct marketer. I was in direct marketing, and basically we went door to door, like selling these products to people. And I was like, isn't this sales? I just feel like a glorified salesman. Like I'm just, I don't understand, how is this marketing? But I was a salesman, really.
Sales is a four letter word, right? We even changed now you're account reps or your concierges or whatever. They come up with some word because sales, nobody wants to say they're a salesperson.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It does have bad connotations. Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately there are some in the profession that have caused it to be that way. But if you're a good salesperson, you're about helping someone else make progress in their life, helping them through a struggling moment, helping them to be better, to make their lives easier, as opposed to, you know, the stereotypical thought is that the person that you're trying to sell something to has your money, and you're just trying to figure out a way to get it out of their pocket and into yours. That's a bad salesperson.
Right. So in the context of a blogger who maybe doesn't even have a product, like a real, not like intellectual products, but like something real that they're trying to sell, like books or something. I don't know.
Physical. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Physical. Thank you. We're still in the business of definitely marketing, because we want to get the word out about our blog and we want to increase our readership. What should we be doing as bloggers to market our blogs? Because we're kind of like entrepreneurs in a sense, aren't we, bloggers?
Yeah. Sure. I would say do exactly what Seth Godin does. He is an excellent example, because he has physical and not physical products, right? Digital products, or really he also offers classes, right? He has like two or three university classes. The Alt MBA is one of his things that he sells, and he does some other stuff. And he does it really well. He gives away a lot of stuff, right? He gives away his knowledge. He gives away interesting tips. He gives away so many things. And then at some point, because I get his newsletter. I don't know what you would call it, every day. And it's usually pretty short. But once in a while, you see at the bottom, sign up for upcoming course. We only have a few things left. Or, you know, I got his book once, and then I got a note from Amazon which said, hey, thank you for buying the book and thank you for reading it. If you get one of his other books in the next 10 days or whatever it was, we'll give you $5 off the book. Right. So if you enjoyed the book and you think there's another one, so he's actually, he doesn't do it as much anymore, but if you got his stuff and you typed back in, like if you responded to his newsletter, he would answer you
personally.
He stopped doing it because so many people are writing him. He's like, I don't have any time. So he stopped doing it, but he's actually gotten back to me two or three times, which is kind of cool. You know, and I said that to him, I said, hey, really cool idea, right? And I said, so which book of all the books that I think I'd read two of his books by then. I said, which of all the books that you've written, I think he's written like 12 or 15 books, he's written a ton, which one should I get? And he wrote me back and he said, you should get this one. And I said, okay. And I bought that book for $5 off.
Wow.
And it was pretty good. I saved right.
That's so funny.
His marketing was the one he told me to get.
So that's, I love that story that he actually like gave you his personal recommendation. That's great. So we have a lot of different like tools that we can use when we're trying to market our blogs. There's email marketing, and then there's all the social media, and then we can do events. And where should we, like if you were to narrow it down to one or two, what are probably the most effective tools that we can use as bloggers to increase the awareness of our blog?
Yeah. So I have applied this for at least 20 years, if not longer, in whatever I did. And so what you generally, the biggest thing, if you want to market your blog, the biggest concern you have to have is distribution. You want to find a place that allows you to distribute it with the least amount of effort, but also to the right audience, because just getting numbers is fine and it looks good. Right. But I mean, if you're writing your blog to try to help somebody and to try to do something for a particular audience, then you need to find out where that audience is, right? I think there's a quote attributed to Mark Twain, which is success is, you know, finding out where your customers are and get there first. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what with your blog, and who's your audience, really understand who you're going after and what they care about. I'm a blogger now, I guess, you know, I mostly write for myself because I love to learn, and I read lots of books. I read dozens and dozens of books a year. And I learn best when I write stuff down. And if I can write it down so it's really short and crisp, and it makes sense to me, then I know I've got the topic. So it helps me as a coach because I can call on that later. And that's my blog. I just books I read and things I, you know, and other stuff I do. I read the Harvard Business Review, and I read lots of things, and I crystallize them into something. Sometimes I tie two or three things together. Sometimes it's just a book report, really, right? Just I take something out of the book. I don't write a book report on the whole thing. I find something in it that I think is really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. Then I'll write about that. But my audience is also looking for the same stuff that I'm writing, right? I used to be an executive. I've helped run 10 companies, generally from sales, marketing, COO. I've been a GM once. So I know kind of what they want, and I know what I would want. So that's what I do. And then I put it out, and I get a pretty good open rate. I think my open rate is 25-30% twice a month. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I get some really good responses. And then what I did with it is that I have a number of people who have really great reach to the audience. So I used to be a Vistage speaker, which is a peer-to-peer advisory, and they have tens of thousands of members around the world. So some of the Vista coaches that I work with send it out to lots of people. Mm. The person who ran the organization that I first started with when I was coaching, he puts out a newsletter once a week, and I think he has well over 10,000 readers. So every now and again,
How do you get people to join your email list?
Well, he's spent a ton of money. So he wrote a book 20 something years ago, 25 years ago. He's then written a follow up thing. He then started a whole organization about it, and he has summits 5 times a year. So there's a lot of effort. But what I did is I just tagged along, right? And I would send him stuff every now and again because I thought he might be interested. And twice he sent my little post out to tens of thousands of people. And then, you know, some of them sign up for my newsletter, or come to my website, et cetera. And I've had one post that I wrote that's had over 5,000 downloads, and I'm just one guy, you know, but it's really popular, and it was pushed out twice to a very large audience, and then it has some momentum. And so I also use LinkedIn and other places because LinkedIn's probably the best social media platform for my audience, which are leaders typically, okay, and learners. Mm. So I will constantly promote my own posts. You know, I'll read, and I don't just put them out as myself. I'll reply to something else.
Yeah.
And I'll say, oh, you know, here's something that I wrote about that from this person. I'll give my little, here's what I learned from it. Oh, you can learn more from my post. And I'll just copy the post in. And I'll get, you know, I won't get a ton. I'll get dozens, maybe, people that will click on it and read it.
Right. Yeah.
So that's to me, that's it. Your job is to first figure out your audience, write really good content, give value. Mm-hmm. You can give value. You got to give stuff away, mm-hmm, and then find your distribution points, right? Keep searching for those audiences or places that can connect you to those audience. And I offer my time. So I'm a coach. There's an audience of people that connect to a group called Small Giants. And Small Giants it's kind of good to great for the little guy. If you're familiar with Good to Great by Jim Collins, it's a book. It's pretty well known.
Good to great. Okay. I was thinking great as in G-R-A-T. And I was like,
oh, sorry. No, good to great.
Okay.
It's a pretty famous book. It's been around for 20, 25 years. Mm-hmm. It's probably on my shelf over there somewhere. Mm-hmm. And, the same kind of thing, but for small guys. So I said, oh, that's a really good audience too. And I started to introduce myself to the people who ran the group. And I just gave, I said, here's what I am. I have a book, you know, I can give away. I do workshops. You want me to do something for you? And they start, it took 2 years and they finally started to like connect with me. But I know that if I get in there, one, I can really help people. And they're the right kind of people. They're the right mindset. And they reach to thousands and thousands of people. So that would help me as well. So that's kind of my little, because I'm just one person. I'm not, I don't have people working for me. I have no third parties. I just do it all myself.
Right, right. So you said something really interesting. Well, you said a few things that are interesting. So the first is you really have to know who your audience is. What do you say to the blogger who's like, I'm not quite sure who my audience is? How do they figure that out? Because a lot of people will say something like, my audience is everybody. And that's probably not true. Right? Not true. So how do you figure it out?
Yeah. The pygmies in Australia are not going to
leave. Exactly.
So, you know. Yeah, you really have to understand. And so sometimes you just get your audience and you stumble around and they kind of, you find them through just spraying stuff out. So if you're starting from scratch, that's one thing. But if you're a blogger and you're doing a bunch of things, I know you put a lot of content out. There are probably people who read your stuff more often than anyone else. So if you have that, then you actually have an asset. My advice is go ask them. And don't ask them, why do you read my stuff? Right? Because they don't really know why they read your stuff. They get some value out of it, some social or emotional or functional value out of what you provide.
Yeah.
And they're probably not really sure. So what I do is, and actually this is one of my more popular posts, is I recommend that you send them an email, because you usually get their email, and say, hey, you know, thank you for being a loyal reader or listener or whatever it is. I'm really trying to understand how to broaden my audience. And what I'd love for you to do is if you were to tell someone that you knew who would really enjoy the same way you do my content, I'd like you to write an email to them saying what value you got from it, how it made your life better, right? It's something like that. Mm-hmm. And if you would, just send it to me, right? So write it as if you're writing it to them, but send it back to me and have, you know, have 10, 12, 15, 20 people do that. You will definitely see a pattern. I've done this 7 times in 20 years. I've always found a pattern. This is sort of like customer discovery, if you will, a customer development. You know, and you'll find it. And what I, the example I gave is I worked for, this isn't content as a blogger, but this was doing it when I first started another sales and marketing job. There was an already established business and they were a data backup company. And so this was 2005. So this was 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're much younger than I am. And you don't even know what tape is in terms of backing up data. But there was a time when you'd have this big reel of tape and it would copy the information down and you'd have to rewrite it and it would take a while and it was a pain in the neck. And then it finally got to like VCR tapes, VHS tapes and that kind of stuff. But it was really annoying. It was difficult. The tape is a degenerative media, so it didn't always hold the data. You weren't really sure if you put it in a cold place or a hot place, it was bad. Mm-hmm. So all these things that went wrong with it. So we started to back up data to the cloud, right? This was, you know, the cloud was just becoming a thing in 2005. And so I took over as a head of sales. We wanted to grow the company. We're looking hopefully to sell it at some point. And so I said, okay, it's my first day or whatever. And I said, look, I want you to know, this is my practice. I'm not going to do anything for a couple of weeks. I'm not going to like make plans and tell you what I'm going to do. I want to talk to our customers. So I said, can you get me a list of about 20 or 25 customers? And I'd like to have a conversation with them. And they said, great. And they said, well, why do you want to do that? I said, well, I want to understand, you know, why they bought from us, what value we give them, etc. So I did that. And before I did though, I asked the people who had been there for 9 years. This company was 9 years old when I started. And I said, why do you think our customers buy from us? And they said, oh, it's insurance. It's always an insurance play. I'm like, well, what do you mean by that? Well, you know, they give us a few dollars a month just in case something happens to their drive or their server or whatever. And they know that we'll give them their data back pretty quickly and they probably won't lose that much. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, that's a really good answer because it was really about the other user. When I ask this question to CEOs, they always tell me how great they are. People buy us because we're awesome.
Right.
And it's like, no, they don't. And they don't buy because you're awesome. They buy because whatever you do does something really valuable for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You got to sort of get your own shoes. But so this was a good answer is insurance. And I said, great, but I'm going to do it anyway. Let's see what happens. So I talked to 17 people. And I'll tell you, Ebony, in the first 12 calls, I already knew the answer. But I couldn't believe that it was so universal that I had to keep making calls. I said, this can't be happening over and over again. So when I asked them one question, which was, what's the most valuable thing that you got from using our service? Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to say feature or benefit, or I didn't say, why are we great? I said, what's the most valuable thing that you got from using our service? And they said, I think it was 12 or 13 of the 17 said almost the exact same words. And it was set it and forget it. So we thought they were buying it for insurance, which was a really good reason. And that may have been one of the reasons underneath, but the main reason was I am super busy. I'm a small to medium business owner. I hate this stuff. And you tell me that you can give me a piece of software or I can get on a browser, click a couple of buttons, and I never have to worry about it ever again. Mm-hmm. How much does that cost? Mm. Sign me up.
That's so interesting because yep. The CEOs thought it was one thing and it wasn't that at all.
At least it wasn't, that wasn't the top of the list, right?
Right, and
right,
right.
You only have two or three reasons, sometimes just one, but it's usually one of two or three reasons that you buy anything.
Right.
So I told my team, I said, just start saying these five words. Whenever you talk to prospects, say, this is why you should buy us. It's set it and forget it. And they told the story. And they started saying this and we were bought 18 months later for 10X revenue.
Wow.
Now it wasn't just because of that. I mean, we had a really good product and we had the reputation and a whole bunch of other stuff, but Iron Mountain, who was a really big provider of data backup, but mostly for paper, bought us. And that was the end of the story. It was great. It was a beautiful situation.
Yeah. So. I love that story because I remember I was talking to another marketer and she was saying a lot of times we just try to sell people something and they don't want that thing that we're trying to put. There's something else that they really want. And if we're not in tune to that, we can miss out on an audience. We can miss out on money. So it's essential to know what they want. But I never thought of just like directly asking them, hey, what is it about my product or my blog that you really like?
Yeah, but don't say it like that, right? Say, what does my blog do for you? How is your life better? How have I helped you in any way? That's what you want to understand, not why they like it. You know what? Because you're a really good writer. The content you give me, it's really great. But that doesn't really tell you cause, right? You want to understand for them, it was, I'm super busy, right? And I don't want to deal with this. I know it's important, so I have to do it. So I do it, but I don't want to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And you're making my life easier. That makes a huge difference. Huge difference. Right.
So what role then do emotions play in marketing? Because I know in sales, they always say it's about emotion. People buy out of emotion, not really logic. How important is that when we are reaching out to people directly or when we are writing our newsletter or when we're posting something on Instagram?
Yeah. So I think emotion plays a big part in everything, in the marketing part, the sales part, and then even after the fact, in the success part of the service part. It's all really emotional. We are highly emotional beings. We're irrational, we're impulsive, we have a lot of emotion. And there's a particular method out there. It's really a theory. It's called jobs to be done. Are you familiar with that at all?
Mm-mm.
So it's been around for like 30 years. And it basically, the premise is that people don't buy products and services from you. They hire a solution to help them make progress, right? To get past a struggle or to make their lives better. And their general thinking is that there are probably four or five stages in that process. And three of them are in the marketing side. First is the first thought you have, right? And that's sort of the push from the marketer, basically saying, you may not know you have the struggling moment, but let me show it to you. And the best example I have for that is iPhone in 2007, right? Steve Jobs came out on the stage in 2007. It's a famous, you know, thing in, at the Macworld thing. And he said, hey, we're going to give you a phone. We're going to give you an internet browser, and we're going to give you an MP3 player in one device. No one had ever thought of that before. And then all of a sudden, everyone wanted it, right? They didn't even know they had the moment. And they said, I can get rid of my BlackBerry and my whatever MP3 player. And I can do it in one thing, right? They paid, I think at the time it was $500 for a phone. Now it's like $1,000 or $1,200. Yeah. But they, at that time, $500 for a phone was outrageous. But people paid it. So you either have to push that on them, or they already have the struggling moment. There's something about what's going on in their lives, and they're like, no, that's I need to fix this problem. Or maybe they see their friend or neighbor, and they're and like, oh, I want to be like them. So that's more of a pull, right? But then you have to start. Then you passively look, right? Maybe, you know, recently we got here a washing machine, right? And our washing machine was older and it broke down a couple times. So, you know, that was our first thing, saying it's a really good one. We liked it. It's, you know, goes 1100 RPM and it almost dries the clothes in it. So it's really good, but it would break down. It would make noise. You know, so that was sort of our first thought. And then, but it was, nothing was happening. And then at some point we said, we probably should start thinking about getting a new one. And then we went to active looking because, so we went from first thought to passive looking to active looking because it broke down and it was like, it was going to be like $600 to fix the washing machine. And at that point, you might as well just buy a new one, right? So now we're actively looking for a washing machine. So those first three things is really what a marketer needs to think about. How do I plant that first thought, or how do I insert myself into that process so they can start thinking about me? And then
that means that you would need to pinpoint their pain point or know their pain point, how you
really
can
really understand what's driving them.
Yeah.
So for me and my business, not my book, but my client business, is my pain point is I help leaders take the guesswork out of growth.
Yeah, I saw that. I was going to ask you about that. Take the guesswork. I wrote that down.
Because I talked to a bunch of people and I said, you know, why do you hire a coach? Why do you hire a growth coach? And why did you read that book? You know, all the things that they did. They hired lots of stuff. They hired a book once to try to do it. They took a class once to try to do it. They hired a coach, then hired a different coach. They were trying to solve the same problem, but they couldn't figure out a way, one that satisfied them fully. So they fired the old one and they hired a new one.
I like this concept of hire and fire.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do. Things. We do it all the time. Wonderful concept.
Yeah.
So your job is to figure out, how do I get them to hire me? And then, of course, your job as a marketer in the big M of marketing, right? Product marketing, product management, all those kinds of things, is how do I also get them not to fire me? Right. Because someone will come and do a better job than you, right? Mm-hmm. The iPhone took over. Well, the iPod took over all the MP3 players before that. The iPhone took over the iPod, right? Basically, the iPhone put the iPod out of business. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, they ate their young, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So that's what you need to do as well as a marketer, is to sell what you have, but you also have to figure out, what do we need to keep building so we're continuing to solve the problem in a bigger and fuller way.
Hmm. Okay.
That's marketing.
So you plant the thought that they need what you have.
Yes.
Or at least what you have can solve whatever problem they have. And then when they begin to first passively look, then actively look, is the theory that they will then remember what you planted in their head?
Well, hopefully, yeah. So generally they do different things. They have different actions and behaviors mm-hmm. for each of those stages, right? Mm-hmm. If you're just first thought, it's like, something's wrong or something could be better. That's just your first thought. And if you can dig back to them and help them understand when that was, right? So there's a gentleman's name is Bob Mesta. He's kind of the originator of this jobs to be done theory. He and one other person in the 1980s and 90s. But he helped a company called Casper. Are you familiar with Casper, the mattress?
I've heard people? Of Casper. Yeah.
They're an online mattress provider. Mm-hmm. So they came into the market, you know, dozens and dozens of years after the mattress, you know, the mattress business. Have you ever bought a mattress, Ebony?
Yes.
It's a pain in the neck, and it's weird, right? Because you have to go into the store. Mm-hmm. And there are mattresses everywhere. You don't know anything about mattresses, mm-hmm. right? Which one should
and
I get?
And they always want you to buy the most expensive one.
Exactly. So you're a total disadvantage. And like, yeah. Oh, just lay on it and tell us what you think. And, you know, like, I don't know. How's it going to be in my house? Or, you know, I mean, so Casper, they figured out all these problems. So typically the first thought of getting a new mattress is probably one of a few thoughts. One is this thing's old and it probably just needs to go. Right. And there might be, of course, some of us have, you know, stains on it or whatever, right? You see that and you're like, this is terrible, or it gets discolored, or it gets uncomfortable. It's, you know, you have a little gully.
The dip.
Those are the first thoughts, right? Yeah. That's going to start your first thought, which is, I'm waking up with a bad back and a bad neck. And you're like, okay, that's a bad thing. So, but you're not really looking at, or maybe you're passively looking now and you're looking at commercials. You don't really know you're doing it. And then eventually, maybe you had a really bad night's sleep or you had to go to the chiropractor and they had to fix your neck or whatever. Now you're like, I got to get a new mattress. This is just mm-hmm. terrible. Mm-hmm. So Casper figured that out and they said, you know, what are the pain points along the way? And they said, you know, well, what we'll do is we'll just give them like two or three choices and we'll just ship the mattress to them. And they can use it for like a month. And if they don't like it, they can send it back.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they made the process easier of actually shelling it. They didn't put you in a store. You didn't have to do that. There was a guarantee, you know, it's annoying to have to bring a mattress in. It's, you know, it's clunky and whatever, but if you're willing to go through that, and then, you know, hopefully you'll keep it. And most of the time we keep it anyway, but you know, they knew they'll get some returns. So they just changed the mattress industry and they grew at hundreds and hundreds of a percent a year. If the mattress business was growing like this, they grew like this.
Right.
Because they understood the job all the jobs that we hire a mattress company to do for us, and they do them much better than other mattress companies. Mm-hmm. And their business started to take off. So I think there are probably other online mattress providers now. Mm-hmm. But that's what they did. And they went to people who bought mattresses and said, why did you buy a mattress? You know, bring us back. And they learned these things about, you know, the gully and then the bad neck and the bad whatever. And so when they marketed to them, they said, are you waking up in pain? Do you have to go to the chiropractor mm-hmm. and, you know, whatever? Mm-hmm. Do you hate mm-hmm. shopping for mattresses? Great. Don't do that. Right. Mm-hmm. Just, mm-hmm. we've got three models that you get the good, the better, and the best. Mm-hmm. Pick one and we'll ship it to you. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you don't like it, we'll come and pick it up.
Mm. See, I don't think a lot of writers or bloggers really think about, I don't think a lot of them are thinking about pain points or probably even know what a pain point is, but I don't think they're really thinking about how their blog can, maybe not, I want to say help people, because there are a lot of self-help blogs, but what their blog is doing for others, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, I wrote a post recently. And I said, I think that I figured out like how to figure out my blog's purpose. And I just answered this question, like, what do I want my readers to do, think, or feel
yeah.
upon visiting my blog? Yeah. If I can answer that question, then I can kind of focus in on what my message is. And I can really start to think about the pain points that I'm addressing.
Agreed. So I would say if you're starting a blog, you should absolutely do a mind map or something and do those do things and feels. That's a really good thing. But once you get some readers, I would recommend don't assume that you got it right because they may actually be doing and thinking and feeling differently than you had originally thought. Mm-hmm. And then you have to decide, mm-hmm. is that okay? Is that what I want to do? And then if you want to go there with them, then great. Now you know where to go. You know mm-hmm. the kinds of things that they care about and you start writing more and more of those kinds of things.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what I said. If you start off, you got to do some guessing and do some hypothesizing, et cetera. Take your best guess. And it should probably come from something deep inside you, right? You're a musician, right? Most of us write music for ourselves, uh-huh. right? We want to process something. My daughter is a musician. You know, she's been to Berkeley on the summers and, you know, she has her own YouTube channel and all that stuff. And she writes mostly for herself, right? And it helps her to actually process stuff. But at some point when you put a lot of your content out there, people are, you know, it's like with art, right? You put it out for yourself, but then they put their own meaning on it.
Mm.
And if your meaning is close enough to their meaning and you're okay to go there, then great. Now you have an audience, you know what they want, and it's something that fills you up as well because it's something that you enjoy doing, then go there with them, right? Same thing with mm-hmm. the product. Like I said, we thought it was insurance, but it was really it was really set it and forget it, and, you know, convenience. We're basically selling time more than anything.
Right, right, right.
That's the value they got of it. So I would say a blogger should try to figure that out. Guess first, but don't stop at the guessing. Once you get some readers, is reach out to them. And, you know, there's a blog post, and I can send it to you. We can put it in the notes of this thing, which has a little, I have it actually, you can cut and paste. I wrote the email for you. You just cut and paste it. You can change it. If they're a blogger, they probably want to rewrite it perfectly fine, which basically says, tell me how I helped you. Mm-hmm. But don't tell me back to me. Tell me as if you're telling someone else that you think would get the same value out of what you're doing. When you put them in that perspective, they think of it differently, because if they're writing back to you, they want to please you. They want, because we, you know, we're, most people are pretty good and we like to help other people and we don't want to upset them. So they're going to say, you know, Ebony, you know, again, your writing style is great and I love what you put out and et cetera. And that may be the answer, but if they're writing it to their friend, they'll probably say something else. You know, when I read Ebony's stuff, you know, I smile. You know, it just makes me feel good. Great. You know?
Yeah. You can kind of get a feel of that, of what people really get from, especially reading material. If you look at some of the book reviews on Amazon, actually, if you go through all of them, like usually the book reviews will say something like, it made me feel, or I learned this, or I love this writer's style. There's usually also some like common thread amongst comments for a particular
there book. Is, but like to, again, I would say you need to, I would contact those people and say, which of the posts that I put out would be at the top of the stack of that feeling that you wrote about in your review? Because it's not everything you write. You're not going to hit the nail on it every time.
Right.
And then you start to look into that thing. Okay, so let's pull that up. Tell me where, which sentence, or which paragraph, or whatever. That's what you want. And you said you felt joy. Tell me more about that, right? What did you do with that joy? Did you, you know, did you get up and go for a run? Did you, you know, get, and that's the kind of information that you want. Cause if you do that enough times, you'll start to see stuff and you're like, oh. And then if you start to look at, if you start to analyze the stuff that you learn from them, you might be able to figure out, I see where a lot of my readers are getting what I want them to get. I need to start writing more like those paragraphs that I wrote in those six different blog posts. Not the blog post, but the paragraph in the blog post.
Right.
It's a constant journey of discovery. Is really what it is.
It is. It is. Because audiences, do they change?
Of course.
Yeah. Bill, how important is it to know what they've tried before your blog?
Yeah. What else did you hire to do this for you? I think it's a huge thing. It's a great question to ask. So there's this great story on which is goes around jobs to be done, which is about.
By the way, Bill, has anyone ever told you so? Like Malcolm Gladwell?
Yes, they have. That's funny.
I was like, his voice sounds so familiar. Who is it? It's like Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah, I don't have the crazy hair, but yeah. I have heard that. It's funny. When I started doing podcasts, I listened to myself and I said, oh my God, I kind of sound like Malcolm Gladwell.
You sound just like him. That's funny.
And I have the same sort of cadence. It's an interesting.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe I listen to him too much. I do like Malcolm. anyway, so milkshake. So this franchise owner wanted to sell more milkshakes. So what he did first is he went out and he asked his customer, he said, you know, hey, we'd love to get more stuff. What should we do? What should we change or do better? And he asked the customers told him, they said, oh, we want different flavors. We want it to be creamier, whatever. And so he made the changes and nothing happened to sales. Sales did not change. So he went out and asked his customers what they wanted. He did what they asked and they didn't buy any more milkshakes. So he asked what they wanted, but he didn't understand what they valued. People pay for value, right? And you can't even ask what they need because they don't really know what they need. It's not their job to figure out to tell you how to make a better product for them. It's your job to get them to complain to you and tell them their problems. Because if you hear enough, then your job as an entrepreneur is to figure out, oh, how can I solve that problem?
Right. Yeah.
And that's the cool part of being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So he's hired this company and they were brought in and they just observed the first day. And what they found was, I think it was 40% of all milkshakes were purchased before 8 a.m. And another large chunk, about 25 or 30%, I think I'm making that number up, was sold between in the afternoon, like between 3 and 5 o'clock. So like 70 or 80% of all milkshakes were purchased basically in a 4-hour window, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And so he went and asked the next day, and he asked the people, why did you buy this? Why did you hire this milkshake? And the people in the morning said very similar stories. I have a really long commute. It's super boring. I'm not really hungry when I wake up, but I want to make it through to lunch. So I want to have something with me in the car to help me pass the time, fill me up, but it's also safe because I can pick it up. It has a straw. Great. And then he asked the people in the afternoon, and it was typically dad. And dad had the kids, and he wanted to be cool. He wanted to score some dad points because the kids would say, hey, dad, can I have a milkshake? He's like, all right, okay, okay, but don't tell mom, right? So in the morning, here's what they did. They found out also, one of the things was sometimes the line is super long in the morning. So they're going through the drive-thru mostly because they're going their way to work. Or they had to get out, you know, that's a pain in the neck. So he said, great. What they did is they set up a stand right inside the door, and they had all the milkshakes there by flavor. And it had a card swipe. And you didn't have to go to the register. You didn't have to stand in the line. You did have to get out of your car. But you just come in, grab your milkshake, swipe your card, and go. Hmm. Guess what happened in the morning? Sales went up. Hmm. Now, in the afternoon, same exact product, right? So we changed the delivery system in the first product. In the mm-hmm. second one, they changed the packaging. Okay. Because kids... I don't know if you have any kids, but generally kids don't have good gross motor skills, right? Mm-hmm. Or fine motor skills. And if you ever bought a milkshake at McDonald's, the cup is kind of crappy. And if it mm-hmm. stays in too long, it gets soft and, you know, kids can squish it and it spills everywhere. So they made it more like a sippy cup. Mm. They made it smaller to assuage mm-hmm. dad's guilt. Mm. And they made the straw a little bit bigger so the kid could suck it out easier. Mm. And guess what happened in the afternoon?
Sales went up. Right. Yeah.
So the milkshake was fine, but the delivery in one and the packaging in the other made the difference. That's when you understand the full job that people hire your product and service for, you get better at it.
Right. Because the morning audience had a different pain point than the afternoon audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, to answer your questions, that's my long way of answering your question with. So what they also said is, what else did you hire in the morning to do this? And some people said, well, you know, I hired a bagel and cream cheese once, but it was kind of messy. Crumbs got all over my car. It was kind of dangerous because I would be spreading the cream cheese on while I'm driving, which isn't so good. So I fired the bagel and cream cheese. Some people said I hired a banana, but you know, it was a pain in the neck, and the stuff from the banana would get on my hands, and I would get on my steering wheel, and that was annoying. It didn't really fill me up. One guy said he bought a Snickers bar and he felt guilty. Any bar, and then I'm thinking, you know, but you bought a milkshake.
Exactly.
But he didn't see it that way. Right? He's like, you know, it's a milkshake. It sounds good. So
it's the milk that makes it healthier.
Exactly. But even though I don't think there's any milk in a milkshake at McDonald's at all, I think it's more petroleum product or whatever. But you know, maybe I'll get sued for that. I'm sure there's some milk in it. So you can see the way that they tried to solve the problem with different things. It didn't. Mm-hmm. They didn't go to Burger King and get milkshakes. They didn't go to Wendy's and get a Frosty. They hired a bagel and cream cheese. They hired, mm-hmm. you know, a Snickers bar, etc. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that's, we do this all the time. We try to solve the problem. We figure out what the job is, and we want to get the job done. And we find things that will solve it as quickly as possible. And we'll make trade-offs, mm-hmm. right? Some people are like, well, I don't, you know, it's a pain in the neck to have a mattress brought into my house and try it out and then send it back. However, if you're going to let me pick one, order it online, send it to me for free, and allow me to do it, I'll make that trade-off. I will suffer through the process of dragging it up the stairs and putting it on the mattress thing. So
would you say, because you asked a very important question, what does your audience value? And from most of the examples that you're giving, it sounds like a lot of people value time.
Yeah. Time, yeah. Money, ego. Those are the three things most people value.
What's the third one?
Time, money, ego.
Oh, ego.
Ego. How am I perceived? Why do you think someone pays so much money for a Mercedes or a Jaguar?
Okay.
Yeah, they're pretty good cars, but you know what? You can get a car that's just as good or pretty close for a lot less money. It's because I've got a class, whatever. I am showing off.
Right.
And that's, I mean, that's perfectly fine. But we do a lot of things because we want to be perceived a certain way, or we want to feel certain way. That's back to that emotional and social, right? Functional, emotional, and social. Gets the job done. I could buy a Toyota Camry. That's functional. It'd be the same thing as a Mercedes. Maybe not as fast, but pretty good, right? But I feel good. I feel better. I feel like I can afford a really good car. I, you know, I feel like I've made it. And people are going to say, wow, Bill is really doing well, you know? And they see me in a different light. That's why I hire Mercedes over a Camry.
Right. I never thought of that.
Right?
So it's, so I think of prestige, like usually if someone buys something like that.
Right. That's social.
My higher end social. Right, right. Because it's this image of yourself that you want to make real, right?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. It's, it's, I would say, I mean, there are, sometimes there are other reasons as well, but those are usually the top three, and they probably come up, I got to say, at least 80% of the time, one of those three or a combination of those three are coming up as to why you decided to do something. Is time, ego, or money? And I got to say, ego is probably up there as number one.
That, as you said, I think you just said, ego ties directly into emotion.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Because emotion is from within. Social is from without. Right? So if I can, so let's say you become super famous in your blog. Now, I might read your blog so I can tell other people that I read your blog.
Okay.
And
because, you want to be part of, like if I say I read Malcolm Gladwell because I want people to think of me as part of that crowd.
You got it.
Because there's a certain image that goes with people that read Malcolm or Seth Godin or whoever. Ha ha. Okay. So then, because I know value is very important.
Yes.
And I think any babysitter would know that. Like if you're trying to persuade like a 2-year-old versus a 15-year-old to do something, the 2-year-old, you can't persuade a 2-year-old with money. 2-year-old doesn't give a crap about money, but the 15-year-old might value money so you can get him to do it. How do we figure out what our, I guess we could ask them directly, what our audience values by asking them directly or by those questions that you suggested we email, like what is it that my blog does for you? If we read those responses, can we discern what their values are?
Yeah, so I've sort of, in my experience is there's sort of three stages. One is the thing I told you about is kind of a hack, right? It's just simple. It's fast. I don't think it goes into the depth that you might need to go if you have a nuanced thing, but if you just want a quick and dirty answer, great. It also can give you, information that if you ever call them, you can dig deeper into certain things, right? Again, like we said before, tell me which post you read that made you feel joy, the most joy. All right, was there a sentence or a paragraph or somewhere in there that really was the thing that, you know, you interrogate them. That's sort of the end, right? If you can, you basically have to interrogate them, not interview them. You have to try to figure out like an FBI agent when they get you in the room. Right. And they say, you know, where were you on the 5th? And what they do is, and people say, well, I don't really remember. Well, can you remember what day it was? Well, it was a Wednesday. Okay. Do you remember what time of day? It was probably in the afternoon. I think the sun was up. Okay. Was it warm? Was it cold? And actually what they're doing is they're doing associative recall because our brain has connections to all sorts of stuff. And they can bring you back to that point. You actually remember more stuff. Because you're now you're making connections. Mm-hmm. I was with Ebony and Sue and Mary, and it was on a Wednesday. Oh yeah, now I remember. And that's what you're trying to do with your readers is try to figure out, you know, where were they? Because they might have gotten a lot of joy from your paragraph, but maybe it was because it was like a beautiful day and they were outside and they were on vacation. Mm-hmm. So it might have been the paragraph. But it also may have been enhanced by where they were. And you say, great, was there another article that you read that wasn't there? you know, and then, okay, and you do that. And then you hopefully you're starting to see it's of what I can write and what topics and or style I can do versus the other stuff that might be impacting them as well. So that's why you have to sort of interrogate them. And the thing in the middle is something called customer development or customer discovery. So discovery is for a startup and development is for a product that's already out there. That sort of sits in the middle for me. You're not really interrogating, you're doing more of a discovery process, right? You're just trying to understand, you're getting a little deeper than the email and you're closer to that live vault, you know, thing, the set it and forget it, right? Mm. You're, what was most valuable? Tell me what you were feeling. And when I've done hundreds and hundreds of those interviews. And what I've learned is that when people start to give you emotional words, you mentioned emotion earlier, mm-hmm. that's where the magic is. Because mm-hmm. say I'm talking to you and you say, you know what, I was really pissed off because this happened in the software that I was using or whatever. And then I won't stop them there because I want them to finish their thread of thought because you never know what you're going to get. But I'll bring right. them back and say, you know, like a couple minutes ago, you said you were pissed off. Tell me more about that.
Right, yeah.
What pissed
yeah.
you off? Mm-hmm. Who were you with when you were pissed off, right? And that's more discovery. And that's when you get to the set it and forget it stuff. And I've had other things where I found other stuff that sometimes it wasn't even a good thing. There was one interview process we did. We spoke to, I think, 20 or 30 people. And we found out that people really didn't want our product, which was kind of sad.
Yeah.
You know, and when I told my CEO that, my founder, he was not happy. And he told us we didn't know what we're doing. And he was wrong because 2 years later, they switched what they sold. They turned the product into something else.
Yeah. So that's why they say you should always, how do they say? You should always ask your audience first what they want before you even start making a product or writing yes. something because. Yes.
That's customer discovery. That's,
okay. Yeah.
You know, that's people like Steve Blank, who's the godfather of startups. He's a professor at the University of California, Berkeley. There's Eric Ries, who did the Lean Startup. He's a relatively famous book. He was actually a student of Steve Blank in his class, and he wrote the book from that. There are other people out there. Yeah, so that's discovery. And that's a great process. I highly recommend it. I advise a lot of startups, and you know they come to me and, you know, I'm the old guy, and I've done 10 startups, and I was 5 for 10, which is pretty good. I was actually 5 for 6 once, which is phenomenal.
Wow.
And so they say, you know, what little bit of wisdom can you give me? And my first thing is always the same thing. Is don't fall in love with your idea.
Mm.
Fall in love with the problem and the customer. And you'll have a much better chance of actually making a real business out of it. Because I know it's a small data set, but I've done 10 startups. The thing that got us, for the ones that were successful, which were probably 6 or 7 would be semi-successful, 5 were really successful. The original idea was never the thing that got us to the success, never. Never the first idea we came up with or sold or tried. It was, we pivoted or modified it.
Mm-hmm.
That happens a lot, you know?
Bill, I'm sorry to cut. I think that kind of scares people, is bloggers in particular, maybe even business people, because you don't want to start something and then you figure out, oh, this isn't even what people want. And the thought of like totally pivoting or changing is sometimes overwhelming. Yeah. Or people feel like a complete failure.
It's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
Right? And either it's going to happen immediately or slowly. But if you're not, this guy Ash Moria, he has a great saying, which is, life is too short to build something or write something that nobody wants.
Mm.
Right? If you're going to really do it, and you want to be an entrepreneur and you want to make a difference, do something that adds value to the conversation that contributes. Now, if you don't care about that, that's fine. If you just want to write your stuff and put it out there, and that's cool too, and you might get lucky. But if you really want to be deliberate about it, you have to understand, you have to go find an audience that cares, that this thing matters to them. And it also has to matter to you, because if it doesn't matter to you, then you'll get bored or you won't go through the tough times, because you're going to have tough times. It's going to happen, right? Coronavirus is a tough time.
Yeah.
You know, but you're like, if you really love it, you're like, oh, we're going to get through this. You know, maybe we're going to have to figure out how to do it, but we're going to get through it, etc. If you don't love it, then you won't, you'll have this a smaller chance. You have lessened the chance that you'll actually muscle through the hard stuff.
Wow. We are almost, I looked up at the time. I said, oh my, I can't believe we're almost out of time. There's so much more to talk about. I wanted to point out something I think is important in what you're saying about interrogating and really talking to the audience. And it's inquiry. Like you really have to keep asking the questions and probing to get to the real answers. Because if you just ask someone like, what are your values? A lot of people don't even know what their values are. But if you keep asking these questions to probe and dig deeper. So my question to you is, how do we even make the space for that? Like when I think about, well, I kind of do have events where I talk to some of my readers, but I think a lot of bloggers are like, how do I gather my people in a place where I could have these conversations? Because it sounds like you kind of had to have a conversation with them.
Yeah. Well, what's great about writing is it's free, right? It's just time. Mm-hmm. So you can just try stuff and you can put something out there. You know, if you're a humor writer, you can write like Irma Bombeck, or you can write, you know, more like a Sarah Silverman or a Jerry Seinfeld, or, you know, pick your, you know, Paula Poundstone. Mm-hmm. They all have different styles and they're going to appeal to different things. So, you know, you could put stuff out and then try it and then see if anyone picks it up. And if you're really good at something, then you might be able to pivot a little bit and do something else. And it doesn't cost you anything. You have to build anything. You have to spend anything. So from a blog perspective, it's a lot easier. That would be the same thing for a coder. Someone can code. They're not paying themselves. They're just writing code and they can throw stuff out and see what happens. Mm-hmm. But if you're building a product, then that gets expensive. You have to buy materials and you have to outsource it or hire people to build it and that kind of stuff. That's the one I would say, spend more time up front to try to figure it out. Because again, people are going to vote with their wallets or their feet.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you keep hiding your head in the sand, you're just going to slowly die.
Yeah.
And I'd rather just die quickly and then go on to something else. Because it's a lot of wasted money and time if you just keep trying to keep it alive. Because you'll find some people, right? There's 7 billion people on the planet. You know, it's going to be hard not to hit something.
Right. And you know what I think it is, Bill? I think I can say this for myself, and I know it's true for other for bloggers in particular. It just takes time to kind of build the audience. At first, yes. Things seem so slow. It seems like you're not reaching anybody, and there's no one who's interested in what you have to say. But you just have to really have the patience and the passion to keep putting stuff out there, right?
And get better at writing, because you know writing is a skill. Right. So then that's the issue with writing is it because I'm not a good writer?
Right, yeah.
Is it because because we all love our own writing. And I look back, I mean, I started writing these blog posts 4 years ago, and I look at my first ones, and I'm like, well, it was really bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the writing style was terrible. I ran on, you know, my grammar was bad and whatever. And I got better. I'm still not a great writer. And I certainly understand that. My wife and my daughter are really good writers. So I know what a good writer looks like because I live and breathe it every day, but I'm good enough. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to be a writer. I'm trying to put out content that helps people.
Right.
So they're not looking at, wow, that really touched me. That was, oh, he put it in a simple way that I could do stuff. He has bullets and steps and, you know, great. You know, use four stickies, not three. I mean, that's what they want, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what, but that's what my audience is. My audience are trying to figure out how to grow faster, and I'm trying to give them exercises and things to do or books to read, et cetera, to help them do that. And that's why I think I get a good response.
Bill, this has been an amazing hour. Gosh, it's like, it's so interesting talking to different people, because even though I might talk to multiple people in the same line of work, each person has a total unique experience with it and different perspective and just new insights. So I really appreciate this conversation. This was great.
Sure.
Tell us where we can find you.
So you can find me in one place. Everything is there. All my contact info is there. My email, my phone number. You can actually download my book for free from my website as well, or you can order it from Amazon or Audible. And that's www.catalystgrowthadvisors.com.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Bill. You know, I'm thinking maybe I won't even do a video version of this. I'll just do audio so people will think I'm interviewing Malcolm Gladwell.
That's a good idea. I should probably practice my impersonation like it could come off.
Oh my gosh.
That was great fun talking to Bill Flynn, and make sure you visit my blog thisweekendzazo.com for my big takeaways from my conversation with him. And tune in to Motivation to Write next week. I have my guest, Bridget Jackson Buckley. She is the author of The Gift of Crisis, and she's going to tell us how she overcame a major crisis in her life and how she uses meditation to live a life of purpose. I'm looking forward to that conversation, so please join us. Also, subscribe to my newsletter at zazo.com, and you can follow me at Instagram follow me on Instagram. My handle is at Motivation to Write, and also Facebook at Motivation to Write, Twitter, Ebony Haywood, and have a fabulous week. See you next time. Bye-bye.